Welcome back to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here. Multiple sclerosis, more commonly known as MS, affects more than 350,000 people in the United States and 2.5 million worldwide. And while there is no cure as yet for this disease, research efforts continue to find better and better ways to treat it. And joining us this morning to tell us about one new such collaborative effort is Dr. Burke Jubelt. He's a professor of neurology and microbiology and neuroscience at Upstate Medical University, and he's also the director of the MS program at Upstate. Welcome, Dr. Jubelt. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, it's exciting to be here. I'm happy to talk about the new research.
So exciting. You've just been granted $12 million to do this collaborative effort. Tell us about that. First of all, what is the grant and who are you working with?
So this is a grant to treat a particular type of multiple sclerosis that does not have any treatment at the present time in collaboration with people at the University of Rochester and at SUNY Buffalo. So I think it's very exciting. Now, this is a four-year grant, and it's going to take several years before we start enrolling people in the study, but I think it's an exciting avenue of approach.
Absolutely. Let's start out, though. Help us all understand a little bit more about MS. What exactly is MS?
So MS, or multiple sclerosis, is a disease in which you have the immune system attacking what's called myelin in the central nervous system. And myelin is kind of like the insulation around the nerves in the central nervous system. So it's easy to think about electrical wires and they have insulation around. That's kind of what it looks like. And the immune system attacks the myelin and kind of destroys the myelin and causes what's called scarring. And that's where the term sclerosis comes from. It implies the scarring that's found in the brain.
So who does it affect?
So it primarily affects young people. The average age is around 30 to 32. Range is like 15 to 50. And the type of MS we hear about the most is called relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, and that's about 80% of the cases.
And what does that mean?
So when we say relapsing remitting, it means they have an attack. They actually recover either totally or partially from the attack, and then they're okay for a while, then they may have another attack. And that's about what we mean by relapsing remitting. But what happens over a period of time is you have attacks and you don't get total recovery, so then you're left with more and more deficits.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another type of MS, which was referred to as secondary progressive MS. Now, we have a lot of medicines to treat the relapsing remitting MS and slow it down. If without treatment, roughly 90% of those people with relapsing remitting will go on to get what's called secondary progressive, where they slowly, continuously get worse rather than having these acute attacks. And we don't have any medicine to treat the secondary progressive.
So once they've gone on to the secondary progressive, right now there is no treatment for that.
Correct. We have about 8 approved medicines, FDA-approved medicines, for the relapsing remitting type, but we don't have any for the secondary progressive type.
So what are some of the symptoms that people experience with MS?
Well, when MS first starts off, you can lose vision. Usually it's in one eye. What's referred to as optic neuritis, that you get partial or total recovery from. Then you can have numbness and tingling. You can have weakness. You can have pain occasionally, fatigue. These are some of the common manifestations when it first starts.
So it varies from person to person.
Correct.
Too. And but in many cases, basically what you were explaining is that it's the body's own immune system that kind of turns. It's considered an autoimmune disease in that respect.
Correct.
It turns on itself, so
right,
to speak.
Yeah, and I understand MS. I mean, it's not a genetic disease. In other words, you don't inherit the disease, but there is a genetic predisposition to getting the disease. So that in addition to this genetic predisposition, there's something in the environment that causes the disease.
To start.
And, right, mean. Right. And we don't know for sure what that is. There's all sorts of theories. It might be viruses. It might be lack of sunlight and vitamin D. That's another big hypothesis at the present time that people are looking at. Because there's a higher prevalence of the disease in the northern parts of the United States and in Canada where there's less sunlight and we have less vitamin D.
That's very interesting. I was going to ask you that because in my notes in preparing to speak with you today, I noticed that there's an unusually high incidence in New York State.
Yeah, it's very high. It's like 150, I think, per 100,000 people. That's the prevalence, which is quite high, as you can see. Well, if you go down to all the way to the equator, it's only like one per 100,000.
So it almost leads one to think that something like sunlight or the amount of days you're exposed to sunlight might have some impact.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the study then. Who actually gave the money for the study?
So the money comes from the New York State Stem Cell Program. So it's a New York State grant. And as I say, it's a grant that comes through here as I'm the principal investigator, but then the money's divided up between here, Rochester, and Buffalo to support the research.
So the research is to actually look at the role of stem cells. Help us understand what, just briefly for our listeners, what a stem cell is and then how it would have an impact in this case.
So a stem cell is a cell that is not differentiated into into mature cells. So it's an immature cell that can be differentiated into many different types of cells.
In other words, it could become a neurologic cell. It could
right.
become, skin cell
skin
potentially.
Cell, right. Yeah. It can. So it can be differentiated. It, depending on its environment and where it's put, it can differentiate in these different types of cells.
Almost like a chameleon in a
That's
sense.
That's right.
Okay.
And so in the secondary progressive type of MS, the myelin, that sheath that we talked about that protects the nerve, is lost.
It's by then, in other words, in that whole long process of getting to that secondary progressive stage, the myelin is gone by then.
Right, a lot of the myelin is gone. And the myelin actually does help protect the nerves in the central nervous system, in the brain and spinal cord. And without those, then the nerve starts to die. And that's what causes this secondary progressive phase where you slowly get worse and get disability.
So permanent disability.
Permanent disability, correct. So what we're trying to do with these, they're actually one step away from stem cells. They've become oligodendrocyte cells, which are the cells in the brain that make myelin.
Wow.
Okay.
So you're creating little manufacturing
right.
centers for myelin?
That is correct. And so we hope to put those into the brains of people with secondary progressive MS, and they go everywhere pretty much. Based on animal model studies, they will go anywhere in the central nervous system and make myelin.
Wow.
And so if we can repair the myelin, then we can stop the death of the nerves in the central nervous system. So that's the goal of the project.
That's fantastic. And I've heard of, in the past, I've read or heard of the concept of using stem cells in other neurologic diseases, things like Parkinson's. And have you any experience with that? I don't know, not specific studies. But.
Right. I mean, I do know about those studies, yeah, and there are suggestions that that's maybe helpful in Parkinson's disease. We have a lot to learn about all the stem cells and how to make them do what we want them to do.
Right.
But there are studies that suggest that in Parkinson's disease that the stem cells may be helpful.
In the same way. I mean, a little
Correct.
Different mechanism, but taking on the role of other cells that are deficient or not working.
Correct. But in that particular situation, it's a particular type of nerve cells that are dying off, and you may be able to replace those with the stem cells.
It strikes me, and maybe this is something that's obvious to you, but not to me as a layperson, why wouldn't this also be very helpful in the earliest stages of MS, as you were talking about that earlier stage when it's more intermittent? Why wouldn't the stem cells be helpful there?
Well, they might, actually, but you have less myelin destruction earlier in the course of the disease, so there's still plenty of myelin around. And then you also have this problem with the immune system attacking the myelin, which we have these medicines that seem to slow that down. But so there may be, at some point, be a role for the stem cells in that situation, but initially it's the people who don't have hardly any myelin left that we need to try to see if we can show a benefit.
Repair it or,
right.
or replace it.
Correct.
So what do you think, do they have any understanding of how to turn off or reframe the immune system? I mean, I've had interviews of late where we've talked about using the body's own immune system, harnessing it to fight cancer, for example.
Correct.
So that's obviously a positive thing. I mean, you're involved in immunology. Is there some understanding of why it goes awry, for example?
Yeah, it's an immune system that reacts to things. I'll say things. It could be viruses.
Threats,
or
some kind
be
of a threat to
threat,
the body.
Right.
Some difference
correct,
that doesn't
correct.
Shouldn't be there.
That's right. And then it doesn't shut off the way it's supposed to shut off. It just keeps going. So then it
goes awry.
Goes
so to
awry
speak.
And keeps the inflammation keeps going and it keeps attacking areas in the brain. So there's, for instance, there's been studies suggesting that if somebody has had infectious mononucleosis, they have a 2 times greater risk of getting MS than people who have not had mononucleosis. So that suggests that there's some relationship to maybe Epstein-Barr virus. And maybe one virus could be multiple viruses that somehow trigger off the immune response to go haywire.
Mm.
And then the studies with vitamin D suggest that vitamin D actually suppresses the immune system, and maybe that's how it helps, possibly, mm-hmm. to slow down inflammation.
So there's a lot to be learned with the immune system in terms of both having it help us fight invader cells, so-called, like cancer, plus obviously infections, but also how when it goes awry, it creates a lot of problems.
Yeah, and there's actually some data in MS that, as you just said, that the immune system goes awry. But there's also some data that suggests that the immune system, part of the immune system, can help repair some of the damage itself, but isn't quite efficient enough to do that. So one of the areas that people are also looking for is, say, how do we make this give things that will help the immune system make more myelin also. So that's being looked at also in terms of studies.
That's amazing. Well, it's amazing that you were able to garner this kind of a grant. I mean, $12 million grant is quite a sizable grant, and the fact that it's being done right here at Upstate along with these other institutions is really quite impressive.
Well, it's exciting.
And it's very exciting. I'm sure you're very excited. Now, you're the principal investigator.
Correct.
How many people will you be involving in this study?
Oh, there's at Upstate, there's probably about 10 different people that are involved in the study, and each institution has a number of people also.
And how many subjects do you think you'll be looking for?
We're probably going to have about 50 patients in the study.
Mm-hmm. This is total between the three?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So you'll have 50. And what's, in a little bit of time we have left, just give me a feel for how the study works. I mean, what do you do? Where do you get the stem cells from? That's always been mm-hmm. A contentious subject, I know.
Right. So the stem cells originally came from fetal tissue, mm-hmm. and then they've been matured, and then, as I mentioned, they're one step away now from stem cells. They've been led down a path to become all of these oligodendrocytes and make myelin.
So they've already been kind of given their marching directions,
right,
their instructions,
right.
And the idea is that they're ready to be little manufacturers of the myelin.
Right.
And then do you insert them into, how do you,
so
the
then, so all the studies so far have been done in mice, okay, and they're injected into the brain, and then they go everywhere in the nervous system and remyelinate and make new myelin. And then they, once they've pretty much in the mice have made all the myelin, then they kind of stop being so aggressive at making myelin, and they're just kind of sitting there in case there's damage that they can repair. So that's kind of what we plan to do in people. We're going to have to put the cells into the brain and the white matter of the brain. It's kind of in the center of the brain, and then hopefully they'll, as they do in the mice, will differentiate and spread throughout the nervous system and make myelin.
Well, it's an incredible undertaking and very exciting for you, for Upstate, and for the community, and for the world, potentially. So I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing this very exciting news with us. My guest has been Dr. Burke Jubelt. He's a professor of neurology and microbiology, and neuroscience at Upstate Medical University, and he's also the director of the MS program here at Upstate. Stay right there. We'll be right back after these short messages.
Thank you.